Hello and welcome to Talk From Superheroes. Hey everybody, I'm Andrew Iveme.
And I'm Diana McCullum.
And you're listening to Talk From Superheroes, where every week we discuss a piece of superhero television or film. And this week on the podcast, we are talking about the 2010?
I think it's 10.
I believe the 2010 film Super.
By James Gunn.
By James Gunn. Just Super. That's it.
It's just called Super.
Just Super.
Made it real hard to Google.
Does make it difficult to Google.
You're looking for a superhero movie called Super.
Yeah.
You know what comes up when you type that into Netflix or something? Literally everything.
It's all over the board.
It's every super movie ever made.
Yeah. And this wasn't that long ago. I might let 2010 go as like the last year where you didn't really need to think about how Googleable your movie title was. Movies that come out this year, stuff like Old, I'm like, you didn't think about how you that is unsearchable.
How was this not called The Beach That Makes You Old?
Done.
We all came up with a better name.
That would always get the number, like if you put that into Google, for number one for sure would be the film called The Beach That Makes You Old. So like 2010 I think was the last year I'm willing to forgive a like you did not make a good Googleable movie title name.
Ooh, 2010, 2 years after I did. I mean, because movie stores were still mostly around-ish.
Ish. But I'm saying, like, 2010, that's me being generous.
You are being generous.
I'm being generous of, like, that is the last time.
You're a giving man.
I am a giving man.
I've always said that about you. You've been very kind to James Gunn.
Always have. Always have been. And
he's
always
been so...
We'll see. One thing that we will tag on to this episode just as a quick content warning for this episode. This movie is a little bit more severe than movies that we will typically cover on this podcast. So we would like to give you a quick content warning in terms of if you haven't seen the film and we're thinking about seeing it in terms of the film and what we're going to be discussing in this episode, which is violence, hyperviolence, and also scenes that involve sexual violence as well.
Yeah, it's a little bit darker than we knew it was, and
yes.
Then darker than movies we usually cover. So if that sounds like something you're not going to enjoy, maybe come around next week or skip ahead to some fun parts or get ready for that skip button.
Yeah.
Whatever you need to do for you.
You take care of you is what we're saying.
That's like what we're saying.
Yeah. So just a quick warning and addendum on that. But we're doing Super this week is as a build-up to the next James Gunn movie, which is, you know, theatrical movies are back, and James Gunn is doing the next Suicide Squad.
We thought this made so much sense in our heads. We're like, we'll do James Gunn's other superhero movie.
Right?
And build up to Suicide Squad, which neither of us had seen. But Suicide Squad, the Suicide Squad.
The Suicide Squad.
We must say that.
Not Suicide
it's
Squad 2.
Genuinely very important.
Yeah,
it's a different
yeah.
movie slash franchise slash continuity. I don't even know.
We'll find that out next week on the podcast.
We will find that out. So Suicide Squad, jumping the gun.
Jumping the gun?
Jumping the James gun.
Jumping the James gun. Yeah, because we discussed that. It moved up in the queue somehow. Which
James Bond must be furious.
There's part of me that's like, this isn't allowed. Like, all of the movie releases are backed up. You know, James Bond got bumped back. Black Widow was bumped back. Free Guy was bumped back. And then
Shang-Chi was supposed to be way earlier.
Bumped back. We should have had like a Spider-Man by now, I think. Like,
oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everything got bumped back. And then like quietly in the night, like during the pandemic, the Suicide Squad filmed and is now ready to release and has completely jumped the queue.
They have. And
rude, frankly, rude.
You know what? Especially rude because not really a spoiler, but to briefly talk about Super, they beat people up for butting in line in this movie. This very movie, they're like, you deserve to be hit in the head with a wrench if you butt the line.
James Gunn's very principles state that the Suicide Squad should not be coming out next week before the release of films like Free Guy and James Bond.
Hypocrites.
Just pure.
You hate to see
it. You hate to see it.
In Hollywood? Are you telling me?
Are you telling me?
There are hypocrites in Hollywood?
So that's why we're doing that this week because movies are back. We're doing Suicide Squad just to give you a heads up of what's coming up on the podcast.
Movies are really back.
Movies
this
are hardcore back now. We're getting like the late summer blockbuster? But the Suicide Squad, the titular Suicide Squad, is going to be next week. After that, on the podcast, the week after, we're going to be covering Free Guy.
Which was supposed to come out way before.
Yeah.
Suicide Squad.
Yeah, like that's...
Ryan Reynolds, also furious.
Also, I think actually, probably not.
He's Ryan, actually a really chill man.
He seems like he's just kind of pretty laid back about the whole thing.
Pretty cool.
He is pretty cool, isn't he?
I genuinely think that every day to myself. Ryan like, Reynolds
he's
is
pretty cool.
And
after Free Guy, we're going to be doing Snake Eyes. Then we're going to be doing the Incredible Hulk, which is an MCU movie we've never done on the podcast.
It's our final MCU movie
is
that we've ever
done. Really?
It closes out the MCU for us.
Wow. And then we're going to be up to Shang-Chi. So that's what we got coming up over the next month on the podcast.
It's an exciting month of new content.
It really is. Movies are back.
Movies are back. That it does feel like movies are back, you know? I know they've been back for a few weeks, but...
But now it...
Feels
looking
like
at our upcoming schedule where I'm like, oh my God. Several blockbuster movies. Movies are back. For now, I still feel like some of these things. I feel like James Bond is screwed. James Bond is cursed. I don't know. James Bond is the new Mutants.
I was just about to say, new Mutants. We're going to have, like, Daniel Craig's going to be so old doing press eventually. And, not super old, but just, like, I made this movie a decade ago.
Yeah, he has no idea. He doesn't remember what the movie even is.
I really want to ask him if he's going to do another one. I want to be on the press junket for No Time to Die or whatever this movie's called.
Right.
Maybe that is the next name.
No Time to Be Released.
No time in the world to do anything except ask Daniel Craig if he'll do another movie.
Because
it's funny.
You
gotta
ask. It's funny to watch him hate being asked that in interviews. All right. So before we get into this week's episode, we need to give a quick thank you to the sponsor of this week's episode. Thank you to our friends over at NordVPN.
NordVPN. So easy, so safe, so wonderful, so fast. What else can I say about NordVPN? Andrew, what can we say?
I mean, you're hitting the big things. You need a VPN. All right.
You need one, guys.
The amount of... Now, granted, I know a lot of people in my life who are using a VPN. They're happy. They love it. They swear by it. But I will still sometimes, like, say something to a friend, and they look at me like, how did you watch that? How did you stream that? How did you get access to that content? I'm like, a VPN. And people just don't know that this is a necessary thing. I think, like, a necessity for internet living in 2021.
You need it for your security and your safety and for your enjoyment of all the content on the entire internet, and Nord does it better than anyone. They're a Swiss Army knife of features and essentials for your internet uses.
Yeah. I love it for accessing region-blocked content that might happen, because in Canada, that occurs fairly frequently on weirdly, like, innocuous content sometimes, where it's just like, you can't see this in Canada. I'm like, why are we relegated to this? Why are you treating us like this,
I assume internet? Other countries are also relegated. For me, especially right now, I am using it for all my Olympic coverage. The coverage here is maybe lacking, and you can see every other country's, like, actual Olympic coverage if you want, like, some real gritty, like, actual commentators for whatever country you're watching. You can...
Right.
You can get down into it.
Or if you're traveling, like, maybe you're not in your home country, but you want to see your home country's Olympic coverage clips, whatever you have going on. But it's great for region-locked content. It's also great for privacy and protection and safety as well, because we all live in a world now where maybe you take multiple steps for online or cyber safety. I know I do. I know a lot of people do, whether it be, like, the type of router, the level of protection, or visible or invisible networks that you might be using, or some kind of a protection on your computer. But the great thing about NordVPN is that it can be for all of your devices. So we're all, you know, going out and about, we're in the world, you maybe need to connect to a public Wi-Fi at some point, at a coffee shop or at an airport. And that immediately doesn't have the levels of security that you've applied to maybe what your home network is or what you would have in your comfort zone. So just to be able to be at a coffee shop or at an airport and then immediately just, like, turn on this VPN and have an additional level of security and protection from that public network, it feels good right away.
It feels really good. It's really fast. It's really easy. You can put your NordVPN up to 6 devices, as Andrew said, so you can have it on your phone, on your laptop, on your home desk, wherever you need to protect your data. Nord is there for you.
Absolutely. So go to nordvpn.com/TFS and use promo code TFS to get a 2-year plan plus a bonus gift with a huge discount. So go to nordvpn.com/TFS to get a 2-year plan plus a bonus gift with a huge discount using promo code TFS. And thank you, NordVPN, for your support.
Thank you so much, Nord.
And now let's get into the episode. Let's talk about Super. Right, so we have seen James Gunn's Super. Diana, did you like it?
This is tough, because parts of this movie are genuinely really funny, and it moves at a nice pace, and it's only 90 minutes long, and the stories and like the performances are pretty good. But then there's a lot of humor about topics that shouldn't be comedic, and it really ruins big chunks of the movie, if not the whole film. So I just don't know if I can say I liked it, but there's definitely scenes where I laughed. And then the whole like second half, you're quite uncomfortable, really. So maybe I'll give it a not like. Like, I felt genuinely uncomfortable in a way I don't like when I watch a movie. So, yeah, okay, not like. I did it. I got there. I figured it out.
You had to take a bit of a walk to get there, but you got there.
You know what? Sometimes you got to walk to get where you're going.
Uh-huh. It's a good mode of transportation.
You can't always jump in a car. Sometimes you just take your time, clear your head. Yeah, it's a no. It's too gross. And I know James Gunn is gross, but some of this humor I'm like cool with, and I'm like, yeah, that's funny. And then a lot of it, though, is just like, these shouldn't be humorous topics. Sorry, bud. You didn't do it this time. Andrew, did you like it?
I'm a don't like. I don't like it. I don't think it's good. No. I didn't have to walk around. I'm a clear don't like on it. I agree with you that the movie does have, I think, redeeming aspects and characteristics. Like, there are some laugh out loud moments and lines. Like, there are some moments where it actually did give me sincere belly laughs. And there were moments with, I think, appropriate levels of inappropriate shock horror.
Yes, there
are. So there is that the kind of like school of filming that I think James Gunn is a fan of and kind of came up through the like the trauma filmmaking of the like shock horror, crazy gore, let's go over the top and have fun with it. And that's part of the charm. And I think there are points of this movie where they do that purposefully and with intent, and it is successful. And then there are parts of this movie where I think that it's just inappropriate for inappropriate sake, and it doesn't even have necessarily shock value. And then there are times where I think it is distastefully inappropriate for no sake at all. It's not working on any level, and it's entirely wrong. And then also I think there are points of this movie that are actually just kind of bland, traditional, boring. So it does run a gambit of like there are strong belly laughs. There are definitely some positives that I'm going to have to say about this movie. Then it kind of alternates into like a little bit boring. And even though it's only a tight 90-minute movie, it feels a little bit padded and like they're killing time. And then some inappropriate stuff.
Yeah, I will agree with everything you just said. And I think that actually is, let's start with the default thing that you said at the beginning, like the easiest one going chronologically. Mm. It is kind of boring for the first 30 minutes until he decides to be a superhero.
Uh-huh.
It's really like, it's just him being like, oh, Liv Tyler left me, and Liv Tyler's doing nothing. No yep. performance whatsoever. I mean, she's not given anything to do.
Yeah,
I don't know.
True.
I don't know why she agreed to do this movie. It is baffling to me. But yeah, there's no jokes until he decides to be a superhero, and it's a good 30 minutes in.
Yeah.
And even to the point where we're like, why is the opening credits so long?
Yeah, like the opening credits is this like big bombastic like cartoon musical montage about like all of the crazy wacky characters that we're going to meet. And they're never that crazy or wacky, and it never matches the tone of the film in any way. Now, weirdly, I feel like part of the problem of this movie and why it's so boring off the top and why it does have moments that get good is that I think all of this is the incorrect casting. Ooh. First of all, literally not a single actor except for maybe Elliot Page. Other than Elliot Page, I don't think a single actor was the appropriate casting for any of these roles at all. Because when you look at like what that opening credit sequence is, it's this big cartoon bombastic musical montage of like, look at this. It's like this almost like very like WB, like this very like Looney Tunes.
It's kind of like Schoolhouse Rock.
Yeah, but it is very much just like, look at the Looney characters we'll meet. Oh, the Looney adventures will go on. I've got a cross. You got a cape. And we're Looney adventures having a time. And then it just like cuts to like Rainn Wilson just kind of looking sad into the distance for 30 minutes, and it never matches what the tone of that cartoon sequence is, which I think might be the pure distillment of what this movie was meant to be that no one captures or knows how to do.
I think I get what you're saying, because, yeah, Rainn Wilson can be very funny in an office-style setting, but not in a lead of a zany superhero, because that's not the energy he brings. He brings a very dry, straightforward energy. I agree Elliot Page brings the exact energy of the opening sequence. I will add Nathan Fillion.
Yes, Nathan also, Fillion as well.
Of course. Yeah. Absolutely, of course. Nathan Fillion not in this movie enough.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And not related to any of the main characters.
No, just
because
kind of doing
he's
these
like,
interstitials.
Yeah, which are very funny and very good, but we need to interject that life into some of the actual characters of this movie, which it just doesn't have. But yeah, it's very boring off the top. I fully agree with you.
And another thing, I'm baffled by this opening sequence, I have to say, because it was fun and it got me a little bit pumped. I'm like, oh, it's going to be like a fun superhero thing, like Kick-Ass perhaps, like dark superhero. I can handle that. But then after you watch the movie and I think about the opening, I'm like, that opening said everything that was going to happen in this movie. It definitely was supposed to be the closing credits. Mm-hmm. And if you're trying to pad for time, there's no reason to put it at the front instead of the end. Because mm-hmm. it would still be part of the movie if
part
it was
of the
at the end.
Time. Yeah.
I can't understand it. Because like it shows them hitting the guys with the car. It shows that there's a rabbit. It shows them blowing up from bombs. Like, everything that happens in the movie is in the opening thing. And that's not how movies work. I'm watching the movie to find out what happens.
It's a fun credit style to do, the summary of a movie credit style. It's a lot of movies do it. It's fun to do. It's fun to do at the end. I think that you do have to pay more to back legitimately, you have to pay more to backload your film's credits.
You do.
Rather than put it up front, which is why like a lot of intermittent movies will do a top load or a front load credits. So you have to pay more to move them at the end. So I don't know if it was just a budget thing, but in which case, like, I think drawing attention to it and drawing it out more made it worse.
Yeah, that's a good point. I can get that. Because, yeah, then there's just like, because then it is just maybe, or also maybe it was to interject some energy into the opening because it is pretty, like, because you have, I think, like 5 minutes and you find out his wife's left him, and then you have the opening credits, and then you have about 20 minutes of boring still. So without that opening credits energy boost, it really would be quite a drag for a while. Because, yeah, the scenes with, like, them in the diner are so nothing.
Oh, nothing at all.
Their relationship is nothing. Liv Tyler is a bigger star than this. I don't know. And James Gunn hadn't done anything before this movie except Slither. I'm baffled on so many fronts.
Right, right.
About what all these big stars are doing here. Linda Cardellini has 2 lines.
Yeah, yeah.
She never came back. I thought she was going to be the end of movie love interest.
Yeah, yeah. I could see why you would think that. I also thought the same. Now, I know before he had directed Slither, he had directed like some shorts and some sketch stuff and like some trauma
stuff.
But he had written some bigger stuff. Yeah. So maybe just through writing, he just had the right kind of connections. Like, James Gunn does seem to be this like weirdly just charismatic, connected person who the people like him love him and are ride or die for him. So, you know, he meets Linda Cardellini for like a minute and suddenly they're best friends and it's ride or die, I'll be in a scene for you. So maybe it's just that type of personality he has.
Okay, Linda Cardellini, I get. But Liv Tyler, like, independently wealthy because of her father, famous for the Lord of the Rings movies, like, she never needs to work again if she doesn't want to. And is like, yes, I will be in your independent film where I'm a drug addict who gets sexually assaulted. Yeah. With no comedy, no funny lines, no acting at all. It doesn't... Nothing about accepting this role makes any sense to me.
Yeah,
like, I get why Elliot Page is here. This is a fun, different kind of role. Like, that makes total sense to me. Like, it's a daring from what he'd been doing before this, but, like, I don't know why Liv Tyler's here.
And Elliot Page is one of those actors that has consistently been very clever about what project to choose next. And it is... it is that contrasting, and I feel like Daniel Radcliffe is another star who has done that. Weirdly enough, like, yeah, there'd be like it was after like Harry Potter. It was like nudity on stage, and then it's like I have gun hands, and then a serious independent. Whatever guns akimbo was, that one, the gun hand one.
My hands are guns.
But Elliot Page has done a very similar thing of the, like, I need to find the exact opposite of what my last role is because people want me to be my last role. Like, I think Hard Candy was
Hard Candy was really early.
But after Hard Candy, it was like, I need to, like, not be, like, vulnerable victim. And then I think the next big thing or huge thing might have been, like, Juno. And then it was like, I'm playful and I'm likable. And everyone wants me for playful, likable, but then I've got to be a superhero or I've got to be like this foul-mouthed lunatic. So just very like, no, you're not going to catch me. You're not going to catch me
you
and typecast me into that last role.
What movie I'm going to do.
I'm impossible. So I think Elliot Page has been very clever with role selection throughout the career.
Yeah, definitely. Because, yeah, he's even in a kind of self-referential in this one in a fun way, because this was 4 years after X3, and he's just like, Wolverine class? And I'm like, I don't know if you can legally, like, I feel like Marvel would have been mad about
that. You can do what you want legally. I don't know.
Why did you say that so confidently?
I'm just like, I don't know. You played the character. You were in the universe. You do what you want at that point. No one could stop you.
He didn't have the claws.
I guess that's true.
Oh, my God.
So I think that a very good role for Elliot Page.
A very good role for Elliot Page. But, yeah, the opening is boring. It really does pick up with genuine good humor once Rainn Wilson decides. I don't know why I don't think his name is Rainn Wilson.
Right.
I think I'm wrong every time I say it.
I think it's because we're Canadian, we want to say Rainn Maida. Because we had never heard the name Rainn before Rainn Maida of the Canadian band Our Lady Peace.
Rainn Maida is the only Rain. Thank you for understanding why.
No, I fully get it.
On my tongue. Thank you so much. So Rainn Wilson, when he actually starts deciding to be a superhero and he goes to the comic book store, he's like, I need comic books about heroes who don't have powers. Very funny. The Wrench is quite funny.
Mm-hmm.
There's like really good humor up until Elliot Page becomes a big part of the movie who is gross.
Okay, so it's difficult for me because obviously the sexual plot line between Elliot Page's character, was it Libby or Liddy?
Libby.
Libby. Between Libby and Frank, it's inappropriate, it's awful, it's a terrible storyline. From a performance aspect,
Elliot's amazing.
Absolutely incredible. Libby shows up and I'm like, oh, this movie has like life and vibrancy and you are crazy in like a fun way that is Looney Tunes cartoon. Like you are doing literal cartoon violence. Like you are, it is upsetting because the camera is showing us real world violence. And that I think is the juxtaposition that shock horror and comedy meet to be like, we are doing something that is cartoonish, but we are showing you grisly reality. But up until that character, up until Libby shows up in the movie, we've just been seeing Rainn Wilson who've been showing us grisly reality while the camera shows us grisly reality. And then Libby shows up and I'm like, oh, here's a cartoon character in a grisly reality. And that is comedy in the shock horror. And I like the energetic performance. And it really injects a bit of like life force into this movie for
me. Yeah. Once Libby becomes bolty, like it's just a Libby movie for about until Libby dies. Spoilers. I will disagree slightly because I think when Crimson Bolt, Rain, is on his own, he does have a very fun montage where he's like dropping anvils on people. He is finding the zaniness in his own superhero-dom on his own.
Okay,
in a fun,
I can see that.
In a fun, violent horror way that I actually am okay with and think is quite funny. Like dropping anvils on people from a fire escape is hilarious. Let's be real. There's no way that it's not. So I think they find it a little before Libby becomes a main character. But yeah, Libby. It's so weird because, yes, so inappropriate later and uncomfortable to watch, but Elliot Page's performance is spectacular.
Yes.
As an actual, like, person who is insane with wanting to do this, who has a drive for violence, is trying to cover it up. Even just when Lippy's auditioning and doing cartwheels.
Terrific.
And just punching the air, like, clearly I'm a superhero. And they're so bad. And it's like, you've already been an X-Men. And, you are already suited up Kitty Pryde, and you're so bad at cartwheels.
And how quickly Libby as a character adjusts to, oh, I'm a homicidal maniac. Like, yes. I've been waiting to do a murder for a very long time. Because that actually was like a fun twist for me. Because up until that point, it was like, why is this happening? And obviously there are a lot of problems with the inappropriate writing of this movie. But there's just like this, like, oh, you know how the cute girl at your comic shop just won't leave you alone and let you buy comic books. Am I right, middle-aged guys? And I was like, what is going on? This is insane. And he shows up at her party in like a garbage bag, and he's like 50 and she's 20. So a 50-year-old in a garbage bag shows up to a 20-year-old's like party with other 20-year-olds. And
Libby's making out with her boyfriend.
The boyfriend or boy or like whoever this guy is that she's making out with, granted, is rude. Is like, is this your sugar daddy? What's going on? And he's shitty about it. But there should be legitimate concerns here when a 50-year-old in a garbage bag shows up to a 20-year-old's house.
And the 20-year-old kicks all her friends
out.
It's
like the party's over. Everyone go home. I need to be alone with a 50-year-old in a bag. Like, yes, everyone should kind of be shitty to you because, like, what is going on here? But that quick turn to be like, I would like to do homicides, please. It's like, oh, your past behavior makes more sense now. Either you could sense that he also had the dark passenger, or maybe you were eyeing him as a potential victim previously. But either way, you are a serial killer.
Yes. Yeah. Like, Libby was going to kill no matter what. I mean, you know, maybe that's why she worked in the comic book store. Comic books are an outlet in a weird way. I mean, maybe because she right off the bat knew all the superheroes who didn't have powers. I mean, anyone in a comic book store would. But
right.
She'd be like, these ones, we can learn from all of them. They are the masters of the domain. But yeah, the insane performance comes across so well. I will say, writing wise, I think the only misstep in Libby's character that makes me believe Libby is that she has so many friends.
I couldn't
get that many people to a party when I was 20, and I'm not homicidal. And she also seems like socially awkward. She says things she shouldn't say. Mm. She works at a comic book store, which wasn't cool back then.
If you're party
for a 20-year-old,
no, I think it was still like not necessarily like cool, but like it's just like you had a job, whatever. Mm. And also, anyone can have that many people at a party over at 20 if you don't care about like friends inviting friends of friends.
Mm.
Like, granted, yes, like when we're thinking about having a party, we don't want anyone we haven't previously met to be there.
Well, yeah, you gotta be on the list.
But when you're 20, people just show up, and that's acceptable.
I guess
there are random people like a 50-year-old man in a bag who show up to your home, and that's fine.
All right, I guess there were a few people who like cared about her and were concerned.
Oh, definitely. At least one or two who very well should be concerned.
Oh, they should have been, but the social awkward nature of this character made me think that no one was going to be at this party when Rainn Wilson showed up. It was just like a lure to get him there.
She would be as like feel as alienated as he does.
Yeah,
from the world.
And she'd be like, no one came to my party either.
Right, right. Yeah, I see what you're saying there. So maybe it is a little bit weird that there's that many people there.
But no, your point is also very great. I am thinking back to my first apartment and one of my birthdays that I've looked at photos at and been like, I don't know who any of those people were.
Yeah, randos just show up.
Especially, they're 22. It's not 20. Because I was going to say, when you're under drinking age, if there's going to be alcohol. But they're drinking age. They can get their own alcohol.
They're around drinking age. Yeah, I think that like so we're giving a lot of credit to Elliot Page for their performance. I really don't think Rainn Wilson was the right anything for this.
I think Rainn Wilson is physically actually a very good pick for this because he's much bigger than you think he is.
Right,
and I actually believe he can hurt people without being in shape.
Mm-hmm.
And that is maybe the nicest thing I can say about his performance. I'm like, I see why physically this makes a lot of sense. You're a physically big enough man, even when you're out of shape, that I think you could hurt people. But other than that, yeah, not a whole lot to the performance. There's a few like fine jokes, but nothing like where I'm like, you are crushing it, Rainn Wilson. You are the epitome of comedy.
Yeah, because even the jokes that land for me, for him and for that, it's jokes that are from, like, the writing and the edit and just, like, the framing. Like, him just, like, dropping the cinder block on someone. Like, that's a funny moment that he's in.
But you just literally
need, like, a meat bag and a costume to do that scene. You
that
know?
Might have been a stunt double.
Yeah, right? Like, it could easily be anyone other than him. I think performance-wise, it's just too grounded. Not that any of this is grounded, but he's trying to ground it. It sincerely feels like someone who has a chemical imbalance and visions and schizophrenia and mental issues that need help, having an actual breakdown and going into a murderous rage that will end up on the news. And there's nothing comedic about that or in any way in contrast to his world or his situation. There's just nothing funny about the way he plays it or entertaining about the way he plays it.
No, it's not over the top where, like, they've given him, and even in the writing, like, there's no lines about, like, kind of juxtapose the fact that he thinks he sees visions from God with the reality he's living in. He never really expresses that to anyone, which is where the comedy would come from. They're like, well, God told me to. And people would be like, wait, God told
yeah.
you to?
Yeah.
You think, really? Like these crazy things happen to him.
Or
he
the
has
comedy
these
of like in like the DC Comics universe, like Firestorm or Blue Beetle, like someone who talks to themselves,
yes.
and everybody has to be like, "Who are you talking to?" And Blue Beetle has to be like, "The scarab that's on my back," or Firestorm has to be like, "My old professor or football coach, depending on version, who's in my head."
Way to cover all the bases on Firestorm.
I was like, "Wait a minute, which one am I getting?"
Whichever your preferred Firestorm.
A professor or a football coach. Whatever you want, but like there is humor to be mined there.
There's
for
tons
sure
of humor to be mined there. The closest they get is the diner scene when his friend at the diner is watching the news and he pretends he doesn't know who the Crimson Bolt is.
Yeah.
And even that is like pretty flat.
Yeah,
it's like a little like my lips might have gone up. They may have been slightly angled towards my eyes, but it wasn't like an all out hilarious scene.
Because his buddy is calling him out, but his buddy is still not the comedic one. Like, they're both being the straight man of the comedy duo, where it's just, like, it doesn't amp one another up. It is just saying the lines.
It is just saying the lines. I think Rainn Wilson's only truly funny moment, and this might be more credit to the writing, is one of his very last lines where he's stabbing Kevin Bacon. He's like, you don't butt in line. You don't molest kids. You
yeah.
don't deal drugs. And having butt in line on the same list as don't molest kids is just inherently funny. And he does deliver that part pretty well, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, the rest of his performance is pretty flat. For the lead of a comedy...
Yeah, it's way... It's
way too flat.
Like, a dark comedy, granted, but still way too flat a performance.
Especially because he's being very flat, and other than Elliot Page, you've surrounded him with other flat characters.
Yeah.
Like, no one's... If he's flat, but everyone else is big, that's a different kind of comedy.
And that works, too. Yeah.
That absolutely works and is very funny, but that's not what they did here, except for the Elliot Page scenes.
Or even if he's flat and visually the world is big, like, one thing that really interests me about this is that I think that minus some of the very inappropriate stuff, which we might get into in a bit, but, like, minus the very inappropriate stuff, there is a premise here that I think works. And I think the pitch for this movie, if I were to try to, like, sell the concept of this movie, it would be the tone of Watchmen, but in a world with the palette of Scott Pilgrim. Because there are moments in this movie where they try to do that, like, the Biff Pow, but for hyper-violence. And that actually kind of, like, really works and is that playful, to overuse the word juxtaposition on this episode, to juxtapose it, like, once again, to be like, okay, we got hyper-violence and we've got playful comic book stuff. Even when he, like, throws up in the toilet and the toilet creates a vomit image of his wife speaking to him, I'm like, that is insane and hilarious. His skull getting opened as, like, the roof of the house comes off. It's a bit much, but I'm like, this is the level of, like, you know, Scott Pilgrim goes to fight an ex and now they have lightsabers because they both, like, it is that level of, like, we've, absurdity interacts with this world because we're perceiving the world through how this character perceives it. And it is like it would flow on a page. And they do that sometimes. And I don't know if the movie didn't have the budget or if James Gunn was not there as a filmmaker yet.
To be like, that's the aesthetic.
To be that, to that's the aesthetic. But I think that that is the gem of the nugget, which is what about the brutalistic horror of Zack Snyder's Watchmen with the playful aesthetic pleasure of Edgar Wright's Scott Pilgrim? And I think that that's the movie this wants to be or would succeed being.
I mostly agree. I will just, I would say instead of Watchmen, I would say Kick-Ass. Just for, like, low stakes, no actual powers, no real supervillains.
Fair enough.
Feels a little bit closer. But I get exactly what you're saying. And, yes, that is what it wants to be. And, like, the pitch is very religious man, thinks he's sent on a mission from God, becomes a superhero instead of being, like, a religious crusader is also very funny. Like, yeah, if you took out, like, this movie without the, like, five inappropriate things that really unsettled me, honestly kind of funny and good. A little bit more of Nathan Fillion. Because the Nathan Fillion interstitials also find it.
Super funny.
They find
They're perfect. They are absolutely perfect.
Especially the second one. I think there's only two at the school.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's two.
Because first,
because he's in a dream, so he has a third scene. But I think there's two of the TV shows in the school where he's Captain Jesus or whatever his character is.
Or just Jesus, we couldn't really tell.
Yeah.
But, because, yeah, the first one is the devil has, like, made the food makes you sleepy or tired or not care or something.
Right.
And, like, that one guy's like, I packed a lunch. So, like, that's fucking funny. And then the second one I really like, though, because that got the exact humor of, like, it's a Christian show, so they have to be pure and everything, but the kids are in bondage because they got cursed by the devil. So, like, you can show kids in bondage because they got cursed by the devil, and it just seems like something they actually might do on a little Christian network.
Right, right. That's still trying to, like, sex it up a little bit, but they're trying to sex it up while shaming you for liking that they sex it up.
Yes, it's so Catholic. It's,
yeah.
They really captured that in the second one perfectly. Like, just having them still just stand there and do the whole scene in their bondage gear, and the devil's mad that they didn't have sex. That's absolutely perfect. And I also what this movie wants to be and what it should be. Like, the balance of the craziness with the actual real world stuff.
Yeah, and I think there just needs to be, like, something to thread that together to kind of paint a picture as to what this world is, like, in the sense of, like, what is this city, this America, this planet Earth? Because when he's watching TV, which seems to be kind of like a big picture as to, like, who this character is or, like, what this world that he lives in is. And the first time we see it, he sits down and he turns on TV, and the first channel just has anime tentacle sex.
Yes. And it's the middle of the day. We can see the sun shining on his face through a window.
So just that daytime basic cable. Because this dude, he's not rocking a Crunchyroll account. It's a TV with antennas. Like, this is just middle of the day basic cable.
And that was the channel.
Hentai sexual assault.
That was the channel when he turned the TV on.
And that was the default.
Last thing he watched.
Yeah. And it was like that. And then I think there was, like, a quick 1 second of something else. And then it was the Jesus channel. It was like the All Jesus Network or whatever. And it's just like, and that is funny that those are two shows that exist. But it almost feels like a world that needs something like the RoboCop news broadcaster to be like, the world has become so obscene, it's almost normal to us that, like the RoboCop movies did those, like, interstitials of, like, it would be like a news broadcast to be like, 83 people stabbed and had their eyes ripped out last night. So anyway, this has been brought to you by Coppertone. Get SPF 5000 because the sun burns you. Like, that level of, like, we've actually lost all sanity as a society.
The world needs RoboCop.
Yeah,
The world is gone.
Should we
gone
build
to shit?
A RoboCop? So, like, it needs some, this movie just needs something like that. That little, like, here's the world as well that this guy lives in.
Yeah, we don't get a vibe for the world. We just go to, like, the one strip club where his wife works. We never even go inside.
Yeah.
So it felt like they just didn't get permits to go inside. Like, we have this sidewalk for, like, a day. We could film, like, 4 scenes here. 4 different scenes on that sidewalk is probably too much. But yeah, he doesn't want to fight crime because there's crime. Mm. He wants to fight crime because he gets a vision that says he should, but like it's not like he runs into a crime or someone he knows is affected by crime. I mean, yes, this man who runs a strip club is now dating your wife and he ends up being a criminal. You don't even know that when you decide to fight crime. You think he just owns a strip club.
Yes.
And that's very legal.
Yeah.
That's a thing you're allowed to do.
So, yeah.
You don't get a vibe of why this is happening or what the how the world's responding to it. The news kind of a little bit, but doesn't do a great job. They're like, oh, we think he's bad. Oh, wait, the people he beat up had criminal records. Maybe he's good now. Like, it's so wishy-washy on how the world feels about this character.
Yeah, I fully agree. Very wishy-washy and very, like... I mean, this is a prime example for our sister podcast, The Villain Was Right, as well, to be like everything... When he goes to the cop, and I think like that scene is meant to portray to be like, check out this jackass cop. And, granted, fuck cops. But in that scene, it's like the check out this jackass cop is how it's portrayed. But the jackass cop is like, your wife left you, dude. And I'm like, yeah, your wife did leave you. Like, whether or not she was sober in the moment of that decision, be like, this has been happening for a while. And even when the movie ends and he, like, in his own voiceover is like, she hung around for a bit out of obligation, but she in no way wants to be with me. And, like, there are deeper things to get into in terms of, like, drug addiction and whether or not you can actually make proper decisions while that is happening. But, like, sobriety aside, she does not want to be with you. Like, she did choose a different man who was a bad influence on her. But I believe that she made those decisions initially of a sober and sound mind and does not like you at all.
Yeah, I mean, but to be fair to his character, that is the arc he goes on where he's okay with her leaving.
Mm.
He, like, gets a semblance of community and purpose from her leaving and having babies with another man, which, honestly, that's the best I've ever seen a man take a breakup. The second time. The first time when he became a homicidal murderer.
That was one of the bad ones.
But then the second time
was fine.
He was like, this guy takes good care of her. She's got babies. She's real happy. And they send me cards sometimes.
Right, right. A real good sample platter of how breakups can go either way.
With the same man.
Because men are psychopaths.
That I knew.
Yes.
I was aware of that and didn't need this movie to men tell me that.
Men are unstable psychopaths. I will say, we gave a lot of credit to Elliot Page for performance. A little bit of, I'm not even going to say shitting on Rainn Wilson. I really just think it is a poor casting decision.
He's good at comedy.
I fully agree. He is good at comedy. He's good at certain characters. There's nothing during this where I'm like, Rainn Wilson, you blew it. I'm just like, oh, it shouldn't have been you necessarily in this role. But I think that... Elliot Page kind of hitting the keys of the heightened reality of what should happen in this kind of movie. Michael Rooker as well, the constantly used by James Gunn Michael Rooker, is someone who seems like an inch away from insanity as an actual human being is like nuts. Like, yeah, frankly, yeah. Intimidates me. I'm like, I don't know if you're right, but whatever. Like,
if I found out Michael Rooker has killed a man and gotten away with it in his past, I'd be like, yeah, of
absolutely,
course.
He has.
Who didn't see that coming?
Yeah.
Least shocking news story I'd see all year.
For sure, for sure. A man who I may not trust as a human friend, but James Gunn knows exactly who to cast this man as. Like, Michael Rooker is someone who I think has no range, but still manages to, like, own each of his characters a little bit differently. Like, he knows how to play that 1% variation of one type of guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's not him doing the exact same thing every time, but he has found those, like, little tiny wavelength variations on how to completely own a certain type of character.
Yeah, he is a tough guy with just a dash of humanity.
Just a dash.
He is so good at just metting out that little bit of humanity, though, and giving you, like, a look into, like, the darkness of a man.
Like
and
an IV drip of humanity,
yeah.
Just barely getting into your bloodstream.
And, like, every one of his characters, you're like, I could see him going good or bad in this moment. Like, in a moment where a character has to decide what to do or whatever. Like, always his characters, like, feel oddly real, even though they kind of are hyperized.
Yeah.
It is, yeah, I... I don't think I like Michael Rooker as a person. Like, I don't know if he's done bad stuff. I just think he's kind of a jerk. I've seen him, like, do panels and stuff, but he seems like an asshole.
Just seems kind of mean.
Yeah, he just seems kind of mean and full of himself. But I gotta say, he's really good at playing this one kind of role and making it a little bit different every time.
Absolutely. And, so I gotta give also him credit for that. Just one of the best, always perfectly cast, always accurately cast. I've never seen him in a role where it's like, well, why did you put him there? This isn't where he's meant to be. He's always
look
perfectly
at this English teacher.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, Stephen Hawking.
Oh, my accountant, Michael Rooker, is here. Excellent. The books will be fine.
Yeah. What a beautiful mind Michael Rooker had. Yeah, it's never that. He's always very well used, very well cast, and James Gunn really knows where to put him in all of his movies. Not the hugest role, even in the grand scope of James Gunn stuff for him in this movie, but he does work in that role and in where he is. And I think the other one that James Gunn uses a lot, or has used at least a few times, is...
His brother,
obviously.
His brother is working because of James Gunn.
Definitely. But I got... His brother's just around in this movie. Greg Henry, who plays the detective, is another one who's been in Slither I think at least one or two other...
Okay, because he's one of those guys, he came on screen, I'm like, I've definitely seen you in Six things. Couldn't name any of them off the top of my head.
Right.
But you're always a cop for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You got cop face.
Usually dirty.
Ooh, yeah, that's not a clean cop.
Yeah.
No, not that guy.
Yeah. I mean, maybe this one was, and he just died before we got to the dirty cop plot line.
Yeah, because even the first time he came to his house, I didn't really understand what he was doing there. I think he was in trouble for not trying to find his wife. I think the cop was in trouble with his boss.
I think so. He was like, my boss, he needed to get Frank to withdraw his complaint.
I think that was something was about it or whatever. Yeah, because he was in trouble for not going after it. Because his boss was, I got the impression, was a woman and was like, yes, go rescue this woman. And he was like, oh, shit, I'll just get the husband to pull it.
Just get him to withdraw the complaint. That's case closed, too.
That solves the case, technically. Yay for cops. Yeah. You did it.
You did it.
You fucking did it, buddy.
But he often pops in. I think he's, he plays that role straight, but he does a good job. Kevin Bacon is a surprise in this one.
Kevin Bacon, I will say, is like doing something. It's not great. I think the scene with the eggs is his best scene. Mm. I did see in the trivia, and I don't know how true this is because I don't know why he would do it, Jean-Claude Van Damme was supposed to play that role.
That would also make sense why the character's called Jacques.
Why the
character has a French name.
Well, I did think it was very funny when Rainn Wilson wrote Jacques. On a picture?
That is a good goof to, and a really good way to, at the beginning of the film, solidify the intelligence of this character.
Yeah.
To be like, here's this character's intelligence. He think that this is how the name Jacques is spelled.
He thinks people are named Jacques.
Yes, yeah.
In like a stereotype or something. So yeah, it was supposed to be Jean-Claude Van Damme. And James Gunn said he was a bit of a loose cannon. And like, because my style is so particular, I couldn't risk it. So I brought Kevin Bacon at the last minute.
Yeah.
So I don't think he had time to like work it out. But it's like a Liv Tyler scenario all over again. Like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, absolutely.
But at least his character, he's a fun drug dealer. There's stuff to do with this role, at least.
Yeah, and we both read the same thing, which was that, like, Kevin Bacon came in a week before they started filming to replace Jean-Claude Van Damme. And they only took, like, less than a month to film this. So, like, within a month, like, he had to come up with this character and, like, really get an understanding of it, which isn't a lot of time to prep. But also just that implies that Kevin Bacon was just sitting around. Like, you can get Kevin Bacon on a week's notice?
Just available for the next month?
As your second studio movie? I believe Slither was before this. And everything prior was, like, independent or, like, sketch comedy shorts or whatever he only wrote. So for your second studio movie to be like, can we get Kevin Bacon on 6 days' notice? Like, on Tuesday, you were like, I would like Kevin Bacon. And on Monday, you have Kevin Bacon. That doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't, because every other kind of big name, I don't know about the Liv Tyler one, but in the trivia it was also mentioning, like, Rainn Wilson agreed because James Gunn, I guess, used to be married to Jenna Fisher.
Yes, yeah, Jenna Fisher, so Jenna Fisher from Pam from The Office.
Yeah, gave Rainn Wilson the script, and Rainn Wilson worked with Elliot Page and Juno. So, like, oh, there are some, like, oddly 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon going on with the other actors.
Yeah.
But what's Kevin Bacon doing here?
But what's the degree of Kevin Bacon to Kevin Bacon?
What are your degrees, Kevin Bacon? Yeah. What is your degree to James Gunn that you were there in a heartbeat for this man? You're like, I will drop nothing or everything. I don't know what you got on the go, Kevin Bacon. I know eventually you did that TV show The Following, I think, but I think that was years later.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe you were on break, didn't do The Following yet, waiting for that call. How did Jean-Claude Van Damme feel about that? Getting dropped from an indie picture he was probably doing as a favor.
Yeah.
That couldn't have felt good.
He's had some rougher times in his life.
Well, I didn't watch that JCVD show.
It's good. I watched some of it. He's got another one on Amazon now as well.
JCVD 2?
Nah, I don't know. Something like that. I haven't checked out the other Amazon one, but, he's had rougher times.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I need to get into, I don't actually want to get into it.
Sure.
But I'm going to list you some things and then we're going to talk about how baffled I am. Things that are in this movie, like some as a joke and some just kind of there, not as a joke. I don't know which is better. There's anal rape, there's being peed on, there's underage sex with boob showing, they say the F word that I won't say, they say the N word, multiple sexual assaults.
Yes.
Just everything bad you can have in a movie is in this movie. I'm getting to something.
Okay.
Everything bad is here. It's on the table. It's out there. James Gunn got fired for tweets.
Right.
what did they think he was like?
Right.
He wrote and directed this.
Yes.
And this was his last movie before Guardians.
Yes.
So he did this with all that stuff I just mentioned, and even more, like inappropriate young, inappropriate age play, like multiple sexual assaults. And then they were like, yeah, you can have Guardians. And then before Guardians 2, they were like, oh, these tweets though, sir.
I mean, like, what about the movie where Elliot Page goes on a homophobic rant before committing sexual assault?
Oh, that was fine. People paid to see that.
Oh, I see.
It's okay if people paid to see it. He put these free tweets out, though.
Yeah.
And we're going to fire his ass. And I'm not saying any of it's right, but I'm baffled by the timeline and by it being like, it was the tweets and not the fact that we finally watched Super.
Watched Super, which is so much. It's
worse than, because I've read the tweets. And some of the tweets are bad.
Right.
But
I can't even remember what they were anymore.
I reread them as a refresher.
Oh, okay.
This movie's worse than any of the tweets.
Fair. Like the first scene in the coffee shop that Elliot Page's character Libby has, Libby like nails like four back to back where it is just like, there was an N-word in this movie.
Kevin Bacon threw it out.
I was like, I can't remember if it was Elliot Page or Kevin Bacon who has the N-word, but I'm like, you really loaded a lot in here.
Uh-huh.
It is rough.
And like, as I said, parts of this movie I did find funny, but I cannot laugh anymore after two back-to-back sexual assault scenes.
Yeah.
They are back-to-back.
Yeah.
There's no more comedy in your movie, and there's still like 20 minutes left after that. And that's probably like, honestly, the funnest sequence when he's killing all the guys at the drug dealer's
house. Oh, yeah, surprisingly, like a fun action scene.
But all energy had left me at this point.
And the action scene, they're cutting back and forth from the action scene to a active sexual assault.
Yeah!
And the sexual assault has literally, like, nothing to do with the plot or action scene. Like, not only is it, because it is offensive and inappropriate when it happens between Libby and Frank, between Elliot Page and Rainn Wilson's character. It is inappropriate, and it shouldn't be in the movie. But it is something that, like, at least tracks in terms of, like, okay, like,
these characters are messed up.
These characters are messed up and need, like, severe psychological help and assistance and are going through incredible trauma and committed assault and almost a murder today, and they're in a fugue state of a complete psychological break, and everything is terrible, and they're two people who think they're superheroes trapped together while going through severe PTSD and trauma. Okay. I maybe see how there's some sexual miscommunication happens here that leads to a terrible and horrific situation. But the Libby thing, the situation with his wife, with Liv Tyler, it really is just a, like, while an action scene happens, what if we just cut to sexual assault and then, like, it didn't have anything to do with anything,
And then he just stops.
He just stops and leaves the room.
But yeah, and just like, and like horrific. Like it didn't get very far, but she's screaming no.
Yeah.
This is not like she's unconscious and he was like approaching her and she never knew and nothing ever happened. Like that kind of ticking time bomb on maybe a scene like that. This was she's fighting back, getting hit, screaming no. There is nothing enjoyable about this.
No.
Like way too realistic, way too dark, not fun. Yeah, just honestly, I think I wouldn't have gone to see Guardians if I'd seen this before I saw Guardians.
Yeah, I could see that.
If someone was like, oh, the guy who made Super is making the new Marvel movie, I'd be like, oh, no, never mind.
Yeah.
Why? Why would anyone hire him to do that?
It's brutal.
It's
very,
really,
very bad and distasteful.
Like honestly, I can think of few movies I've seen that I've been like this uncomfortable. And like some movies can make you uncomfortable in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, making you see things you don't want to admit happens in real life or something.
Right. I mean, I referenced it all granted very briefly earlier, but another film that Elliot Page was in, Hard Candy.
Oh, yes.
Which
yes.
is an entire film about predatory behavior and sexual
but
assault.
But like very well done. And
that is the purpose of it. And it is tastefully distasteful. I don't even know how to describe it. And granted, I haven't seen that since it came out, so I don't know if my opinion of it even holds up. And I know with sensitive matters like that, with like this, it's hard to say definitively, but like that is a movie that handled the subject matter.
Yes, it's making you feel uncomfortable with a purpose. Yeah. This is just like you're uncomfortable because this should not be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And there are a few moments in this movie where I think they do know how to do the joke or how to do the tastefully untasteful. Like the scene where Frank is first going around and like attacking criminals. And there's the implication that some guy has hired a child prostitute. But like it is the implication, and that's highly offensive, a terrible, awful thing. And then he hits him with a wrench and does that very plain line read of like, you shouldn't molest kids. But, like, it's such an awkward line reading that, like, that is funny to hear someone say the most obvious plain statement in the world. Like, yeah, you shouldn't molest kids. But to hear someone yell that in a terrible line read is very funny.
Honestly, even the next line, I thought, because the kid's untraumatized because nothing actually happened, so he just steals the guy's wallet. He's like, thanks, mister! Just like a real like peppy like Superman kind of thank you. And in this dark situation, that does actually like land as comedy.
Yeah.
So that scene actually like is probably the closest this movie gets to being like, this is the closest line we can walk.
Yeah.
And be successful
right.
in comedy.
Right.
In comedy happening.
Yeah. This is the type of joke in a terrible circumstance that we actually want to do and us doing it successfully. And we're never going to do it successfully again the rest of this movie.
No.
But this is what we're going for. Except for maybe the stabbing Kevin Bacon scene is the only. And then that also has the callback of the, like, you shouldn't molest kids. You shouldn't cut line.
You shouldn't cut line. But that's, like, the kind of, like, gross violence that I think is, like, absolutely fine and funny. And, like, you know, shooting someone in the dick. It's always funny.
Yeah. Very funny.
It always works. I'm totally cool with it. I really am upset, though, that, like, sometimes this movie is good at comedy that's just comedy. Like, when Elliot Page falls because the bulletproof vest is too heavy, fucking killed me.
That really got you. That really got you.
The way he fell just completely chest first really sold that it was genuinely really heavy.
It was a good performance of physical comedy as well.
I'm dying just thinking about it. Because one thing the characters never mention is how fucking small Elliot Page is. Like, I know Robin's small and it doesn't make any sense, but Robin at least was a trained acrobat. But the fact that you can't even wear the bulletproof vest because you're so tiny, but you want to kill men? Fucking kill me!
Damn, that really got you.
I can't stop picturing the way the fell vest first.
Oh.
Joke. That's not about any of the bad stuff. It's just a funny fighting crime joke, and I just want the fighting crime jokes parts.
And I even think that like some of the hyper violence, like the hitting the guy who cuts in line, was shocking and terrifying and too much. But I was like, okay, this is funny as showing to be like this guy is for sure lost his bridge with reality.
He's lost his bridge with reality, but admit to me if this is true. It felt a little cathartic.
A little bit, to be like, you shouldn't have cutscene.
We've all wanted to do it. You know, to the you guy shouldn't have cutscene. Yeah, he gave him a lot of warning. Yeah. I'm not saying it was right, and you shouldn't hit people with wrenches who cut
shouldn't
in line.
Hit people with wrenches.
Oh, okay. You shouldn't have
you shouldn't hit people with
final.
Wrenches.
No, not even in line. You shouldn't hit people with wrenches. But it felt kind
of
good.
Most of the time, you shouldn't hit people.
It felt kind of good.
Yeah.
To watch him do it.
Yeah. And even like the final action scene, the pipe bomb hyperviolence moment, the first throwing a pipe bomb, and Elliot Page as Crimson-y, Tidy, what was
Bolty.
The Bolty. As Bolty, and just that moment of like, whoa, it worked. Like being joyous over seeing a man evaporate. That, I think, was also, like, good hyper-violence comedy. Mm-hmm. Like, that really worked for me.
Yeah, that was very good. And then that's when, I think, the more Biff Bangs also started showing up. And
absolutely.
Like, yeah, not used enough at all.
No. Mm-hmm. No, yeah, just some really, really inappropriate stuff in here. But, like, some of the time it works. But I guess, like, when you're going for shock horror, shock comedy that is super offensive, that's the gamble you work, where it's like when it fails, it is going to fail miserably, and when it does fail miserably.
Like,
offensively awful.
I was pretty close to being like, we didn't like promise to cover this movie, right?
I actually thought the same thing, and like, and was like, I'm gonna check the previous episode, and I was like, we did say we were gonna cover Super, so it does fail that hard, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't feel like we've ever both thought that ever once about a movie.
Yeah.
We've gotten bored. We've never been we shouldn't cover this.
Yeah, yeah. So it gets...
Way to go, James Gunn.
Question mark? I don't know. But there are some nuggets in here. There are some maybe redeeming factors of this movie that could work if it was handled differently, which will lead us to our final question of the episode. We end every episode with the question of what would you change? So now that we've discussed everything we discussed, what would you change about this movie if you could change anything? Before we do ask the final question, we want to remind all of our listeners, as we do every week, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps us move up the charts. It helps us find new listeners, and it encourages new listeners to actually hit subscribe and hit download, because other people do read those reviews and makes it more likely they're going to check out the show. And also, we read the reviews and it warms our hearts, so that's really nice too.
My heart's so cold, you guys. And actually, we could use a little pick-me-up after watching this. So if you could just shoot us a review or two.
Shoot us a hot review.
I'd feel so much better.
I would actually feel better.
It would feel so nice that we did this for a reason. To just get at least one nice
part
review.
Of me does regret doing this. So it would mean a lot. And it's a free way to support the podcast. Just subscribe, rate, review on whatever app that allows you to do that you want to use. Also, you can support the show for free by sharing it on your social media. Share it on
Helps
Twitter,
so much.
Facebook, Instagram, whatever it is that you're doing. Share it with friends. Word of mouth is the only way that that we get out there, because we don't have an advertising budget on this show. So we need people telling people.
We need people telling people. And your friends trust you. They're not going to listen to us.
No.
They'll listen to you.
They'll listen to you. And you maybe could listen to more of us if you want to support the show monetarily.
That was your best segue of all time.
Oh, thank you.
I hate to interrupt it, but wow.
It does ruin the flow that you interrupt it with a compliment, but it also makes me feel very good that you interrupt it with a compliment.
That's
so
great.
Thank you. You can listen to more of us if you want to become one of our patrons. So head over to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. Patreon is a monthly subscription service where you can subscribe at whatever you can afford and get cool bonuses for doing so. You can subscribe monthly, yearly. You can do as little as $1 a month. Whatever you can afford, you'll get some kind of a cool bonus for it. Specifically at the $10 a month hero level, you get a bonus episode of this podcast every single month that's just for our patrons. This month, our Patreon exclusive is going to be Jungle Cruise.
I'm so excited.
Which we're very excited to see.
Love The Rock. Love Emily Blunt.
What's not? We're both enamored with the leads of this movie. So we're going to be talking about Jungle Cruise over as our Patreon exclusive episode of the podcast. So head over to patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. If you sign up at the hero level, you will get access to that episode this month, but you'll also get immediate access to all of the back catalog of our Patreon exclusive episodes. So if you only have 1 month in the budget, you can sign up for 1 month. And then you can cancel, you can leave, you can change your subscription level. Whatever's in your budget, take care of yourself first. But if you do have something something left to give after you take care of yourself and you want some cool bonuses, we really appreciate all the support and all the love from our patrons. So check out the page. Head over to patreon.com/fromsuperheroes, patreon.com/fromsuperheroes. And now, let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? I think before we even get into a formalized answer, we can both agree on just a general, both of us, what would you change, which is remove
the gross stuff.
Remove the gross stuff.
But like the violence is mostly fine. I don't think there was a violence thing I had a problem with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All the sexual violence. Remove sexual violence from it.
I didn't like the slurs.
Remove the sexual violence and slurs. Let's both agree on that.
I think we have flat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the grant. That is the foundation that we're going to build this house on.
Excellent. Because it seemed like a pretty obvious change, but it was what I was going
to
say.
Absolutely. One of us had to say it. Let's both officially say it. We're building the foundation on that house.
Excellent.
Then
the next level of the house?
Diana, what would you change?
My change would be, I really liked your point that Rain was
classic Our Lady Peace.
I wasn't even that big a fan.
Right?
Rain Wilson is kind of like flat, and there is no kind of interpretation of his psychosis. He really doesn't seem all that insane, even when he's hitting people with wrenches. Like, there's no performance there. I really liked what you said about like the Blue Beetle voices. So I think Nathan Fillion should be in this whole movie. He's the only one who can see him. So Nathan Fillion is this crappy-looking Jesus with the bad wig, because he saw him in one vision, and then he saw him on two episodes of the show. And he's the one who told him to go on this quest. So if Nathan Fillion is just constantly in scenes, and he's the only one who can see him, the humor would just explode. Like, you have Nathan Fillion, first of all, and then you have the humor of a character talking to another character that no one else can see. And it's always gold. It's almost hard to make that not work, especially with fucking ad-lib machine Nathan Fillion, who could just say whatever he wanted because he wouldn't have a scene partner because no one can see him. That would be my biggest change. Like, yeah, obviously take out the gross stuff. And then I just think if there's like a Nathan Fillion like guiding light in this movie, it would fill in the time lost to the gross stuff. And then it adds like a lot more humor and energy and a little bit more like obvious psychosis. And that's my biggest change, because I think there is some great comedy in here. I'm not going to say the bulletproof vest scene was the greatest thing I've ever seen.
It really tickled you.
I'm still thinking of it. She thought she could kill people.
It fell right over, though.
That's my change. Nathan Fillion's in a vision the whole movie. Oh, that was normal. Andrew, what would you change?
Well, I would like to. I'm keeping the bulletproof vest scene. That's a guarantee. That is an absolute guarantee. I think what I would change is that I kind of want it to be a reveal that he's out of his mind.
Oh, okay.
Because I feel like they kind of give that away way too, like, immediately they spill the beans on
that. With the tentacle vision and the head thing?
And even, like, they have I think even before that, they go into a narration to be like, I've always seen visions, like Jesus on my wall or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, be like, oh, okay, so this is, like, right away, the premise of this movie is that this is a man who needs psychological help. And then also, what if he became a too violent superhero? I would like a version of this movie where he's a traditional hero, the first act.
Ooh.
Because I feel like this is pretty close to stories that have been done, as kind of sexist and gender rolled as it is, but you could kind of play into that to be like, oh no, my wife got into stripping and drugs and I need to avenge her and like punish the bad people of this city. And if it started out as a movie like that, where as hackney or trite or sexist as that might be, they're trying to intend that you root for this person, that you're like, oh wow, I actually think this person is going to get it together and become the world's first superhero. And then, like, the darkness is slowly revealed, I think would be a much more interesting way to do it. And maybe even have the character of Libby not be a homicidal maniac and someone who accidentally hitched their wagon to an insane person. And to be, like, the later...
The moment Libby finds out.
Yeah, like maybe, like, Libby goes back to Frank's place and Frank has, like, the actor who plays Captain Jesus, like, tied up in his basement. But has been, like, acting like he has, like, backup at home base the whole time. And he's just been radioing in, like, you could do a Norman Bates Psycho thing to be, like, it's just a skeleton at home base that he has been talking to on an intercom as if he's got, like, an Oracle or a Robin or an Alfred or someone. And it is just a full corpse. Like, I think, like, a Norman Bates kind of insanity would add a much more interesting and, I think, darker twist on this movie in a way that's dark but also appropriate and can easily be mined for comedy.
And I think that also is a movie that has something to say about superheroing.
To be like, if for anyone to actually do this, they would need to be completely insane.
Yeah.
And they might deceive you into rooting for them. But
they need help.
Know that you're rooting for a villain who actually needs your help.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what I would like, is a story where, like, they hide the terror and troubles of the character at first. Maybe even if it's just thinly hidden.
No, I like this a lot. That's a different movie, but, like, it's a fun premise. And it's still within this movie. Like, there could be a rewrite of this movie that is that. Mm. And it's got more to say. Mm. I like things that have things to say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you keep the bulletproof vest scene.
But definitely keep the bulletproof vest scene. And I even like your idea. Like, I think once the insanity is revealed, like, easily you could have the comedy duo of, like, your full-on Nathan Fillion's superhero character from TV is, like, in his mind or locked in his basement or something.
We start seeing the hallucinations. Yeah. Where he's been pretending it's a radio.
And then it makes it way more visually appealing, and it makes it the, like, Scott Pilgrim-y fantastic visual voyage that I think they wanted it to be.
I think that works great, actually.
Yeah.
I think that we laid a really solid foundation.
Such a good foundation. Before we started building the house. Because you build the first floor, I build the second floor. But what do you build a house on?
Foundation.
A solid foundation.
Foundation, foundation, foundation.
Yes.
Love it.
Love it. Love it. We fixed it?
We fixed it.
We did fix it.
The foundation fixed
it. The foundation is so important.
We just needed to build a place to live.
Yeah.
It just needed to have a roof.
Yeah.
It was pretty low bar.
Strong foundation, though.
Strong foundation.
All right, well, I think that's going to be it for this week. That's going to be it for Super. But next week, we are going to be back talking about the new James Gunn project, The Suicide Squad, is what we're going to be talking about next week.
Okay.
Okay?
Less excited about it now.
Yeah.
I am.
I actually am legitimately somewhat worrisome of the taste of what it might be.
Yeah, despite it being a huge studio picture and it being years later and I even got good reviews from what I saw.
Right.
Still less excited about it.
Maybe I'm like maybe this man needs a Disney in his life to be a little bit more hands-on censoring what he's doing. Perhaps we will see next week when we discuss The Suicide Squad. But that'll be happening next week. In the meantime, if you want to get a hold of us, you can reach me on Twitter, Instagram, most social medias, at Ivamey, I-V-I-M-E-Y.
You can reach me at Words of Diana.
And you can reach both of us at From Superheroes. And we'll see y'all next week.
Bye.